I want to just acknowledge what a privilege it is to talk about death for me. It just feels like a really sacred space, and I'm thrilled to be here. And I made a promise to myself about a year ago that I would say yes whenever possible. And so when Zhang Bong asked me to be here, I was like, yes, and oh, dang. Actually, those weren't the words that went through my head, but it was close enough. And so I'm here to talk about kind of my experience and the view I hold around death, and not from any position of authority, just my own experience. And also that I'm really talking about the death of a physical form, not more than that. And I think that to understand how I got here might be helpful to know a little bit about how I got here. So my dad died, and he died with more grace than I had ever witnessed him exhibit in his active life. And that was really a gift. And then my grandma died first, but my grandma died, she died, that was his mom, with so much fear. She was so afraid of going to hell that she kept herself alive for a few years. And they were very uncomfortable years. And then my mom pretty much knew what she wanted in her death. And she pretty much got it because she communicated it pretty clearly. And then my in-laws didn't talk about death, didn't deal with death, didn't allow their kids to go to funerals, didn't prepare themselves or their children for death at all. And that was very hard on everybody. It was hard on them as they were dying. It was hard on the kids after they were gone. And those kind of changes and juxtapositions of how people deal with death really shaped, it really informed me. It was like, wow, it doesn't have to be like this. And so I think that's part of what brought me to being an end-of-life doula. So in addition to that, I spent 35 years as a massage therapist, which was a total privilege to work with people in a very sacred space with living bodies. And I have really deep respect for the physical form. I also, through completely different ventures, studied Adlerian psychology and studied trauma and the effects of trauma on the brain and on the body. And while I was doing that simultaneously, I had this opportunity to use each of those views to inform my massage practice. And it was really, it really kind of brought me to kind of how I think about how humans move through the world. And really, specifically, there were things about how the beliefs that we held really shape our bodies. And that was kind of enlightening to me. It was really informative, particularly in my practice. And the other thing that it really brings up is, and is what I've worked with the dying, this is also shown to be true, that the physical form has a will to live that is very, very strong. I mean, our bodies are wired for it. We have complete neural networks in our body that are dedicated to kind of surveying our space for safety and then responding to that in a way to keep us safe. And I should say perceived safety, which is a little bit about what PTSD is about. So the other thing that got me here is I had breast cancer in 2009, was diagnosed really early, stage zero, was treated, left it behind me, went on with life. Was diagnosed again with breast cancer in 2019, and again, caught very early. But this little bugger was aggressive. It was a 9 out of 9 on the aggressive scale. And it kind of, and it really shook my beliefs about what is life, where am I going, what am I doing? And, you know, like, it didn't allow me to take that little, oh, yeah, that cancer thing, that's done with, and kind of move on. I had to, that kind of belief was just kind of blown away, and I had to take a reflection on what was next and what mattered, and which was not a bad thing. I mean, when they talk about the gifts of cancer, I think that was one of them for me. And then I was diagnosed with that cancer the day before my mom had a stroke and fell and died a week later. And so I had this real glance at death right up in my face. And so it just has, all these things have kind of come to me, and instead of running away, for me, the choice has been to kind of look deep into it and see what's there for me to learn from. So, you know, it's like we look at our culture. What are we taught about death? Not much.
Yeah.
And I'll repeat for
avoid
the...
Avoid it at all costs.
Avoid it at all costs.
As if it was avoidable.
As if it's avoidable, right. And I think also our... in this American culture, in our monotheistic, primarily Christian culture, monotheistic culture, there's a lot of using the fear of death to control others in organizations. And it's just been built up. In addition to that, we've got a medicine, right? We've got vaccines and antibiotics that have increased our lifespans and moved our view of death out of the home, where people used to die at home. And there used to be rooms dedicated to those who were dying at home, and it was a part of life. And much of that has been removed from the home, which I think has had an impact on our relationship with death. So I think as Americans, do we embrace death? I mean, some of us do, but as in a general kind of ethos of death is kind of don't talk about it, don't deal with it, don't face it, don't, you know, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about a nice subject, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, do we celebrate it? That's hard. And I'm not here to say what happens after death. I mean, frankly, I don't know. I have my beliefs. They serve me really well. They get me from day to day, and I think that's what beliefs are for. But I don't know what happens. And I do know people whose belief in their own faith is so strong that they are looking forward to death and they're excited about it. Not to the extent that they want to end their life, but that is a going home for them, and they're very thrilled about it. So, you know, my question is, how do we incorporate, what happens when we start thinking about death in our daily life? How does that change our daily life? What might that do for this moment? For me, who is somebody who struggles with experiencing and expressing joy, it's actually brought more joy into my life. It's forced me to get present. Like when we were sitting before this, I was thinking, okay, you know, it's really hard when you're nervous about something, it's really hard to sit with presence. Your mind, my mind, speak for myself, is going all over the place and trying to bring it in. And then just really finding that space of realizing that all the things that I'm worried about aren't here right now, and that I can breathe in this moment, and that, you know, that'll last for a millisecond, and then it'll happen again, and then I'll come back. And just really watching that process with the many parts of my brain that work to keep me safe. You know, it's like there's this part that's, what about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? And then there's this other part like, well, you know, maybe I can just kind of sabotage this and you won't have to do it at all. And then there's this part that is just like, you know what? You have some experience here that might be helpful to others. And then just how do I sit in that, and how do I allow that to be what comes forward? And what can I tell you about what I've experienced with the dying that that's helpful? And, you know, it's interesting. the dying is an interesting process in the way that I see it. You know, there's the physical loss of your physical form, and then there's what your brain does as you're losing your physical form. And people have all kinds of different beliefs about what happens, if anything happens after that point. And for me, what I've noticed is that while everyone's death is individual and separate, there are some common themes. And those themes are really around telling stories, of shared times, of laughter, of joys and sorrows. And what I recognize in that is that the place that's left when we're really close to death appears to be really about our connections, what we shared, and of course, those that are left behind have tremendous grief. And I think that's actually a good thing. I think that's our way of remembering and our acknowledgement and our ability to connect with somebody whose physical form isn't here anymore. And I'm just, it's like, so what would happen if we talked more about death? What would happen if we were able to actually say, well, gosh, I'm terrified of this, or I'm terrified of this, or I'm just terrified of this. Just what would happen if we opened that discussion up and shared it with each other and had a chance to explore with ourselves what our beliefs are, what our thoughts are, what we want. As an end-of-life doula, I'm a huge advocate for thinking about what you want your death to look like. You may not get it. You may not get it at all. But if you don't think about it and you don't share it, there's a very high chance you won't get it. And I witnessed for my mom something that was rather beautiful in her passing, in that she was really clear about what she wanted, and she was really clear and told her kids, and we were all on the same page. That helps. And we were able to honor that. And it was, it didn't change the grief in the sense that grief would, there's nothing that can change it, but it aided in the ability to be present with the grief and not have a bunch of clutter on top of it. I'm sure I've forgotten lots of things here. I'm still shaking. we are all dying. We have, in our physical forms, we're all dying. It might be soon, it might be a really long time from now. Or it might be, there might be some freak accident that makes it much sooner. And so what are the things that I want to do before that happens? What are the things that are important to me? How can I be of service? How can I be helpful? Is there anything that I want? I'm not particularly in need of leaving a legacy for myself, but many people are. And like I said, I have my set of beliefs, which comforts me. I've actually had, my grandmother, I didn't talk about my grandmother. I meant to, so my grandmother was terrified of dying, and she was so frightened of dying. She kept herself alive long before her body was ready and she was not. And then the night before her funeral, which was about 3 weeks after her physical death, she came to visit me. And it was, we did not have a particularly close relationship. We didn't have a close relationship at all. I was really uncomfortable around her. And she came to visit me, and I was like, it was a stunning experience, and it was one that gave me a lesson. She showed up as this I know this is going to sound bizarre, but she showed up as kind of this ethereal light in my room. And I was on hold on the telephone, and I kind of looked at this light, and I wasn't frightened, but I just said, you know, who are you? And she sent back the message, I'm your grandmother, and I laughed. And I'm like, no, you're not. You are nothing like my grandmother was. And I was just, you know, so convinced. And she just held that space until I understood, until indeed she was my grandmother. And it gave me this incredible lesson about judging people, about you don't know what people's true essence is. You know who how they show up and what your interactions are, and that's good for you to deal with. And there's an essence that can be quite different. In her case, was very different than the woman I experienced in physical form. And it was this huge life-changing moment for me to realize that I can't take my view of the world too seriously, and that I can't look at things and say I know because I don't know. And that changed. I was 33, 34 years old when that happened. And that really, really changed the course of my life and how I behaved in my daily life. And my father, who had a terrible relationship with his mother, I never told him about it until he was dying. And he was dying one night. It was about 6 weeks before his death, and he was in the hospital, and he was looking for things. And I finally got the courage up to tell him this story. And he just looked at me and he said, that's all I needed, thank you. And from that moment on, he walked towards death with so much grace. It was a huge lesson. It was so beautiful. And it really taught me that I could look at death with beauty instead of with fear. That was that story. So I guess the bottom line for me is that in spending a lot of time with the dying and thinking about death, I have been given the gift to live each moment with more presence and more joy and more comfort, actually, believe it or not. It seems a little ironic, but I wanted to end with a reading from In Love with the World by Yongar Mingyur Rinpoche. And this is, you know, we have physical death of our forms, of physical bodies, but we also have little deaths every day, right? We have, death of things that we were attached to that we know we can no longer have, or are just, I mean, each breath can even be a life and a death. And he's discussing that. He says, a big question that exists in the West is whether or not something of us continues when we physically die. We can connect with any aspect of reality that is beyond the normal limits of thinking mind. Then we must ask where this reality comes from and how it comes into existence. If we can prove to ourselves through investigation that it has no beginning, then perhaps we can accept that it has no ending. We do not need dramatic, life-shattering experience of luminosity to pursue this question. We can start with sneezes or yawns or meditation exercises or noticing the details of breathing in and out, anything that automatically contains a gap. But to get anywhere in our investigations, we have to be willing to relax our fixed minds and to let go of our ideas of what is real. Letting go itself is an example of dying, but recognition of this dying is what allows us to inhabit the continuous cycle of dying and being reborn with ease. In addition to many deaths that come with glimpses of emptiness, sleep offers a deeper experience of dying before we die, and this can be understood as a kind of medium death, bringing us a step closer to the final death that occurs when our bodies give out. Again, the only real benefit comes with recognition, not with the physical event alone. Training the mind to stay aware of the entire process of falling asleep is not easy, but even making conceptual adjustments to how we relate to this daily occurrence shifts our relationship with death. For example, Tibetans have a turning. Oops, let me. Tibetans have a custom of turning over their cup before going to sleep, signifying not just the end of the day, but the end of one's life. In the morning, we first think, I am alive, I can see, I can hear, I can feel. Then we turn the cup right side up. My new life begins, and I'm ready to receive. In the morning, the mind is very fresh, and just one moment of appreciation for being alive can orient our whole day and remind us of the continual cycle of living and dying. So with that.
That was wonderful. And you look really relaxed now. That was so beautiful. I asked Sahara if she, when we got to know each other and I found out that she's a death doula, I kind of aggressively pursued her to give a talk. And I really want to thank you for agreeing to do that. Zen is often known as the great work of life and death. And I think, as you said so beautifully, and all of you know it all too well, in our culture, we have very little cultural ways to really look at it. Everything in our culture is about moving on, better, better, more, more, more. Don't get mad, don't get sad, go shopping. So a lot of it is distraction, which, you know, we encounter all the time. But to have a dialogue about it is just incredibly important.